You're listening to Supervision with a Vision, where we discuss all things supervision. I'm your host, Sarah, professional counselor, marriage and family therapist, play therapist, eating disorder specialist, and cookie lover, with my co-host, Heather, marriage and family therapist, certified Together in Texas counselor, a Texas transplant from California, and outdoor adventurer. Hi, welcome to Supervision with a Vision. Today, Heather and I are talking about differences and similarities in communication styles. This week, we read Unveiling Cross-Cultural Communication Styles, a little bit of a tongue twister, published in Psychology Today 2023. Heather, the first point that they made feels obvious, but very important. Nonverbal communication varies between cultures.
Right. I think it's kind of right in your face. I mean, most of us can think of things very quickly. Something that first came to my mind is if in the United States, we tend to leave space around people, like in line somewhere, just in, you know, that is not the same in the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I do this. I don't know that I think in certain situations, I need a lot of personal space. But in work situations, I have found myself moving back.
Right.
That someone else who's more comfortable with less physical space gets close to me and I inch back and they get closer and they inch back
and they go back.
And then it's like we're kind of like we're two-stepping around the room because I'm going back and they're going forward. I'm going back. And I become aware of it, that I keep doing that. And because I guess because I'm trying to be culturally sensitive or more or not just even culturally sensitive, but more sensitive to their communication, I eventually quit doing it if I realize they're doing it without
noticing, like it's not
right. They're not doing it to negatively affect me. It feels comfortable to them, and so I maybe give a little bit.
I'm not going to move.
Right, I'm going to try really hard not to move back, or you know.
Okay.
But can you think of any times where you realized you were reacting to nonverbal communication?
Oh, I think that I've seen it in the therapy room. Like I have some clients that will come in, and this is a certain population of clients that is 20 years younger than me and, you know, here to talk about completely different issues, but they'll come in, kick off their shoes immediately, like even in the first session.
Yeah.
And like tuck their legs up on my couch, like underneath them.
Oh, how funny.
Like it is a very, I mean, to me, I'm reading, okay, you're comfortable, but I also think they are more comfortable. Any, like, you know what I mean? Like they're going to do that probably anywhere they go, not necessarily a therapy office.
Yeah.
Just one more place they're on a, sitting on a
that
couch.
That is different. I can't imagine myself doing that almost anywhere.
Right.
But I can't imagine a client doing that and just kind of, and trying to roll with it.
Right. And just,
what about trying to think, not, maybe between a male client and you, like who stands up, who opens the door,
right?
Things like that that are certainly cultural, and I think in most cases not meant to be offensive or hurtful.
Right. I actually had an experience a couple of years back with a client, and he was, I don't know, older than me, maybe by 10 years, but like very, very like gonna grab the door, like walking out. Like that's just his demeanor and his stance. And it was like, it took me a few times to remember, like it's actually important to him. Like it's not about me. I don't need to assert something or change anything. Like it's important to him.
But see how it can be so complicated and nuanced, because I can see that happening with a different person with different intent, and it could maybe be a power play.
Right. Exactly. And I think it can be read as a power play.
Yes.
Like easily.
Right. So you standing up to end a session and you move towards the door and your client moves towards the door and you can tell they're trying to get there before you. That can go two ways. Right. That feels like I'm offering to open the door for you because I feel like that's the gentlemanly thing to do.
Right.
Or I'm being aggressive.
Right. I'm being assertive in the room and I'm going to own
it. And maybe even it, I mean, the way that it could feel could communicate, I'm not letting you out.
I could, right? I could turn.
I mean, see how I'm just noticing that it can be so nuanced and that it can be read many different ways and could cause problems.
You're going to laugh about this. It's actually one of the reasons, I mean, COVID also, but it's one of the reasons I changed my office around. My office is a rectangle, and so before, both myself and the client were the same distance to the door. But now that it's flipped the other way, I'm closer to the door. And I just felt like then it's not an awkward thing because then I am going to get the door first.
Right.
And then I don't have to worry about, you know,
Yeah,
that weird
that
awkward
moment.
dance. Yeah.
But think, I mean, for many different reasons, someone might interpret that
Right.
differently. Like if you're the counselor and your client moves towards the door quickly and
Right.
gets there before you, and your first reaction is you're being aggressive and trying to stop me
Oh,
from
yeah.
leaving, your reaction is going to be very different than, oh, my client got to the door before me and wants to be a gentleman and open
Right.
the door, feels like, oh, well, I can
Right.
let you
I
open
can
the
do this.
door. I
Right.
can allow, you know, that's okay. So
Could go so many
very
different
big
directions.
differences. What about you and I both see kids? A kid client that wants to hug
Oh, yeah.
or even just touch.
Yeah.
And even when I say that, I actually remember attending a training on play therapy and touch, and this was a long time ago, so the attitude has changed a little bit. It was even just having that title was very
Oh,
controversial
yeah. You
because
said touch.
I think people and they what they thought it was about was touching,
Right.
like touching with, I don't, I mean, just
Get
like,
bad. That is a bad word. Do
right.
not use that word. Use something else.
But what the examples they gave, I think, you know, in school and in training, I would have been very turned off by that and said, nope, no, don't
Right.
touch. But the examples that this person gave were so natural that it really changed my opinion.
Right.
Her examples were, and she showed videos, which were absolutely needed in this example. Her videos showed she was sitting on the floor playing blocks and cars, you
Right.
know, building
Right.
things, and that her little client stood up and kind of used her for just a second
Like,
to lean on to
get
stand
up.
up.
Yeah.
Right. And so this kid just first put his hand kind of close to her knee, and then as he stood up a little bit more, then he put his hand on her shoulder
Right.
and just that just helped him stand
Get up.
up. But she also said it was safety and affection that, and so those things were positive parts of her play therapy. And had she said,
You can't touch me.
no touching,
Right.
it would have taken away from that moment. And I went, well, of course,
Right.
right? That,
There's so many times that I think there's always a course of line that is appropriate and not appropriate. But in a case like that, especially if you're teaching brand new, like play therapists or brand new supervisees, that like, don't let a child touch you. Well, that can make rigidity in the room. That can make weird boundaries with a client. I mean, I think I usually tend to be like, well, if you have to correct it, that's when you address it. We don't set up these like parameters ahead of time because it is hard for therapists, but it's also hard for your client, especially kid clients.
I that makes me think I had a supervisee, a male supervisee that was training in play therapy, and the what he was told in school was no. Just
It's
like you're
like, period,
describing,
right?
no,
Nope.
and even a bigger no because you
You're a
are
guy.
a guy.
Yep.
And man, he stuck to it. And it really took some effort to help him to see that there could be occasions where
It
it
was
might just
fine.
be
Right.
reasonable, natural, and therapeutic.
Right.
I think one of the examples I gave was, you know, a kid comes into a session and their shoe is kind of falling off.
Right.
Like either because it's a flip flop or sandal or
Right.
something, or just like their shoes, and maybe offering one hand
Right.
so that they can hold your hand, lean on your hand a little bit while they lean down and fix
Pick
their
their shoe.
shoe.
Right.
Reasonable.
Right. Not something that would really be a red flag alert to anybody. But if that, again, you have that rigidity about like what it is, and it's been ingrained for a while for him to believe that, like it's probably hard to think outside that box of like, what does that communicate? You're communicating like, you know, safety. I don't want you to fall. Like, you know, security. I'm, you know.
Well, and on the flip side, the reason it was so important and taught the way it was, a big no, was because was the concern or fear that it would be perceived
Right.
as an inappropriate touch
Right.
by an adult man.
Right. That can be
Okay.
tricky.
Yeah. So there's a lot of nuance that goes with nonverbal communication, and it certainly varies between culture, people, situation, ages, gender. I mean,
Yep,
you
all
name
of
it. Yeah.
it.
Okay. The next point in the article is that contact context impacts the communication.
Right. And I think we kind of already started going that way a little bit, like knowing where you are in your space and what the intention is behind it is giving kind of some of that context to like, what does this mean? I in particular, have worked with elderly clients who are lonely, and we will go to walk out the door and they will hug me almost like a child would. But it's almost like I'm very well aware it's a need of theirs. It's never a hug. It's very much a like side to side as we're walking in a door, like, thank you kind of hug. It's appropriate. It's not that anyone else that would have seen it would have thought any different. And so I think that is kind of context. This is a need that a client has. Is it my job to provide that? No. But is it completely naturally unfolding in the therapy room? Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know why age, I think, is a really great example. Even before you and I started recording, we were actually talking about something different. But we were talking about if someone put their hand on your knee, the context of that is very, very important.
Right.
Like if your past retirement age client patted your knee as the as you were saying goodbye or do, you know, maybe you're sitting ish close to each other and they patted your knee. Very different feel.
Right. Very different.
I remember, I maybe have told this story before. I had a little client, very young, and I was young enough that he could not tie his shoelaces. And so he's sitting on a love seat next to me, and I patted my own knee.
Right, like, put your foot up here.
And he put his foot on my knee, and I'm tying his shoe, so we're close enough that he could but he patted my arm, and it was closeness, affection, appropriate. But if there were another client that did that, it would be different.
Right.
Like one of your clients that comes in when it takes their shoes off and puts their, if they patted your knee.
If they hugged me. I mean, truthfully, that would be even strange. Like it would, you know, I'm like, that's not their dynamic. It's not the, you know, it's not their norm. It wouldn't probably be necessary.
So context, well, that's age. Can you think of another context where the same communication just means something completely different?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
We already talked a little bit about space, like personal space and personal bubble.
So, I mean, we're talking about clients, but in supervision,
right?
Do you have any supervisors that you would touch?
Nope. I mean, not that I.
That you, it's, you wouldn't.
Right. It's not that I wouldn't. I just can't think of it. I mean, maybe if we were doing an act, like maybe if I was teaching an activity, right? Like I can see maybe, but I just don't think that there would be cause in that place.
Yeah. I think there must be something that I communicate nonverbally. And we're not, today, we're not just talking about nonverbal, but we have been. It must be something that I communicate to my supervisees that none of them, even at the end, as we are concluding, would hug, but many of them have asked if they could.
Okay.
So there's something that's that I'm saying, right? My communication is that I am open and friendly and maybe
willing,
but that asking
is appropriate
would be inappropriate.
Right. No, I think that's a very good like gear of like professionalism, right? Like other therapists in the world, we don't always hug each other, but we would hug each other. Like, you know, it's not, it's not off limits.
Right.
But again, it's about like time, place, like what's going on. But yeah, I can't think of just my regular supervisory sessions, including any of that.
Can you imagine if you had supervision and at the end of every supervision session, they got up and gave you a hug?
It'd be strange.
It'd be so funny. I think I might even like laugh at like if someone got up and started to do that.
What are you doing? We're hugging?
We're hugging.
Yeah.
So not a norm for the for a supervision session, but could be possible. What about... I mean, you and I as counselors are counseling and supervising, but sometimes also other business related situations like a marketing meeting or something. Would you ever touch then?
I don't know that I would initiate. But I think I've had other people like go to shake my hand or like maybe like half-hearted side hug, yeah, like that kind of thing. But I don't know that it's in, it's usually, and this sounds so strange, but it's not usually the, from that I see it from the therapy side. Like yeah, it's from like a marketer or like, right,
oh, you know, so their role is different. And yeah, so then the communication can be different. I think if anything, I always do a handshake.
Yeah. Handshake's yeah, good.
What about, okay, let's try and push ourselves to think about something that's verbal and not okay, just nonverbal. Okay. Context impacts communication. Oh, what if, this is a good one, kids, supervisees, mm-hmm, other professionals that we right, know. What if someone said, I love you?
Right. Right. Exactly. That could mean anything, right? Depending on the client. That yeah, is so important.
Yeah.
In fact, I've had a kid tell me I love you before. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was, I totally knew exactly what he meant. And in yeah, context, that would make perfect sense.
Right. But from coming from somebody different right, that you know, in a work-related right, situation,
like, excuse like, me, I'm sorry, okay, did you just, I have inadvertently had a client hanging up on the phone before, say like, I love you. Like,
okay, I love
like,
you, bye. Yeah, wait, sorry.
Yeah, and that's exactly how it went. But I think it's just one of those like,
yeah, I'm hanging up the phone. I just always do that. What it makes me think about kids or students that accidentally call you mom.
Oh, that's happened.
And how yeah, embarrassed they are.
They're so embarrassed. I mean, right,
right. It's the context. So if mm-hmm, an adult client or right, some other, what like, and I don't know, just a professional that you talk mm-hmm, to sometimes, if they're like, okay, mom, wait,
weird. Well, stop.
Sorry. Okay. I don't yeah, know where that came from.
Right.
That could be unusual, but any other context situations that, with verbal communication that could be confusing?
For supervisees, I always ask for clarification when they're telling me, when they're relaying the message, whether it's from a work colleague or from their own sessions that they've had with clients. I'm always like, okay, wait, stop. What else yeah, was happening when the client talked about that? Because yeah, I think if we're not in the room, we really don't know. We need yeah, all the details.
Yes, yes. That's a good example. Towards the end of my day yesterday, I had a session with a teenager, and I already know this about myself and feel old. I am not up on slang.
Oh, you need to get caught up. There's probably a class for that.
Maybe. There should be.
Let's create
that. Would be fun. this kid said so many, I mean, he was kind of excited.
Right.
He said so many different things, like just in 30 seconds, that I thought, based on context clues, mm-hmm, I think I know what you're talking about, but wow.
Yeah. Define.
I mean, that, yes, there's so I think that happens yeah, a lot. And then we could be talking about age, gender, culture.
Right. All
and like,
things.
What does that mean? What is the thing that you just said? Mm-hmm. I don't really know what that means, and I could really be taken the wrong way. Mm-hmm. I think he said, and again, based on context, I know that I'm not worried, but he said like, I'm so dead.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I had that. Right. And I knew based on what he was saying, I knew what he meant. But if you didn't, what if you really,
I mean, just right.
And you thought, do I need to make a CPS call?
Right.
Maybe this kid is telling me he's in danger.
Right. What does this mean? Yeah.
Right. So that can be really easily confused.
Right. That's a really good one to use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to check myself. What does that mean?
What can mean two things? One, first, I'm so dead can be like, I'm dead tired. Like, I'm so exhausted. Okay. I've had like right. But I'm so dead means like, oh, like, I knew I was like,
I think he meant I'm so over it.
Yeah. Like, I'm so past it. Like, this yeah, is, yeah.
But he's like, oh, I'm so dead. And I was like,
don't say that.
he was excited. So he was talking quickly. Right. And he said like probably five things in a row. And I was like, I kind of think I know what I mean. That means mm-hmm, when you say that, but yeah. Wow. That would be a fun training to go to.
That would be fun. Or we can create it.
Yeah.
I have middle schoolers.
Well,
that can
I
help.
Mean, that would be the research, because I would have to do research to find right, out what, because right, middle schoolers would have some of that, but then
they wouldn't have some of the other things. That
right. Some of the really
in high school.
X-rated raunchy right, things that kids might say. I'm like, right, oh my gosh, what does that mean?
Right.
Okay. Last point in our article this week, awareness is increasing your own sensitivity. We talked a lot about
right,
the meaning of this, what right, we thought it meant. What do you think it means?
So once you have that kind of aha moment, like, oh, I said that out loud, and you know that you did it, right? This is kind of on the communicator side, not the listener side. But once you know, like, oh, I just said that out loud, like, oh, I communicated that. That then creates this sensitivity that is like, what do you do next? Like how in depth do you go with it? It's like when we talk about the kid that says, I love you, Like having an awareness to that is really important, because the kid saying I love you to you is very different than my 40-year-old client saying I love you.
Right. Yes.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Or the one that is hanging up the phone and goes, oh, I love you, bye. Wait, sorry.
That was weird.
Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree. If I have like a sleepy, worn out 5-year-old who's saying bye or do, you know, love you, bye. What?
Right.
Weird moment, but I know I gotcha.
Right.
I know what we're talking.
All good. Not going to embarrass you. Going to keep going. Yeah.
Maybe like, do you think this is like my first example where someone is leaning in and I lean back and they lean in and I lean, and then we do it maybe 2 or 3 times and I realize we're just doing this back and forth. And my sensitivity to it means that I can be aware and then make a decision about, do I keep stepping back because this person is really physically too close to me and I'm uncomfortable, or they don't mean any harm and they're not aware of it. And I think I can be a little closer and still be comfortable. So I'm going to quit backing up so we don't just scoot around the room.
Right. And I know our point was awareness increases your sensitivity, but I like that too. Awareness brings, and it's not sensitivity, but it's like it brings a choice. Like awareness brings.
See,
like,
I think we, well, I mean, either way, that's semantics, I think.
Yes, it is.
That we've read the same words, but we just put, So awareness is increasing your sensitivity. Like you thought, awareness, it's like a chain. Awareness means increased sensitivity. Right. I think it's like circular.
I think that's true. Yes. That, and if you're sensitive, you have awareness to what's...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I think the more aware you are, the more sensitive you are. I guess I was thinking the more sensitive you are, then the more aware you are. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's like a
circle. It works. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you can't really have one without the other.
Yeah. True. So we're saying though, in communication, the way that you could work on this, improve on this, bring more of this into your counseling or supervision is that when you notice something, you can then more thoughtfully make a decision.
Or we just reflect, have it as a mental note. Mm-hmm. I had a professor in grad school tell us to watch how couples sit on the couch. Mm-hmm. Do they pile the pillows between them? Do they sit next to each other? Do they hold hands? You know, what do they do? That very first like training. Mm-hmm. And I've still to this day will find it interesting. Sometimes even my clients will joke about it and they'll say, I know you're assessing how we sit. Like, you know, no, just grab your, you know.
Yeah, just sit. Yeah. Well, okay. So then I think I'm imagining in supervision, like you are noticing what's happening with your supervisee. Oh, like maybe you give feedback and they just disagree.
Right.
Or maybe you give feedback and they have a negative reaction to your feedback. Mm-hmm. Like maybe their feelings are kind of hurt. That noticing that. And sometimes in the case where our communication styles are different or similar, we might also then have to interpret.
Yes. Yes.
But being aware of all of those things happening then helps you to know, okay, so how do I respond to that?
Correct.
So maybe you've said, you need to make an abuse report about that. And in their head, they're like, nope.
Don't want to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. and they communicate that to you verbally, non-verbally. And then you're forming what you do next based on that.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a perfect example, which made our whole circle.
Yeah.
Context to awareness to sensitivity.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We didn't spend much time talking about this, but I would love to hear from our listeners about any communication snafus that they've had.
Oh, that's a good one. That's great.
Some goofs, some mistakes.
We could read them on the air.
Maybe how they recovered from those goofs or mistakes. And maybe what they learned from it, you know, because I think that's important. Mistakes don't just always mean something bad happened. It means you learned from it.
Right.
So we'd love to hear about any communication snafus that you had. And also we'd love to hear any suggestions for future episodes. Thanks today for listening to Supervision with a Vision.